Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are now listening to the Sitting in the Park show. Today is a special show because I have in the studio right now members of the Chicago group, the Calderons, or actually it was the Calderons originally. So I'll just say Calderons throughout the interview. So you should definitely keep tuned. They'll be talking about their music, and we'll be playing their records. And we even have some unreleased material, which you'll get to hear. So it should be a good interview. So first of all, you guys, could you introduce yourselves? Who's here right now?
Okay, I'm Daryl Kennedy.
I'm Ron Kennedy.
I'm Bruce Rogers.
Okay, so first of all, I always ask people, what part of Chicago are you guys from?
West Side.
West Side of Chicago.
Oh, yeah, the best side.
West Side.
And I know, just to get it started, that your group was a combination of a vocal group and a band.
Yeah, right.
Together. So at least the members of the vocal group all lived around the same area, is that right?
Yeah.
So where did the members of the vocal group live?
We really were all raised in Rockwell Gardens, two separate project buildings, and two separate groups that wound up forming the Calderons, you know, two separate sets of singers.
So where's Rockwell Gardens?
That's on the west side. It runs between Western and bordered by Madison and Van Buren.
Jackson, yeah.
Over by the tracks there.
Robbie Expressway.
Okay.
Yeah, Eisenhower.
And were all the members of the vocal group from Rockwell Gardens?
Yes.
And the band, and I'll get to you. I'll do two separate stories, and then we'll kind of come together. How about that? So you guys up here are brothers, is that right?
Right.
And who are the other two members of the vocal group?
Alan Brown passed away, and John Banks.
Okay, and that was pretty much the lineup that never changed of the Calderons.
Correct.
And even later, when you recorded as the Final Solution, you had that same
same
lineup. So can we talk about which part each group member sang?
Well, I sang bass.
Okay.
Bass and lead. We all led.
A little tenor too.
So Ron is the guy who sang bass.
All right.
And I was baritone, lead vocal too, and it was second, and I could hit first. We all kind of was versatile with that. Everybody.
Okay, so
mainly did bass.
So you had bass, and everyone else kind of switched parts.
Yeah, switched around.
Okay,
a lot of stuff.
And as people will hear in a second, you had, especially with the bass, which was unusual for a soul group, you had a Temptations type of sound,
right,
actually on your records.
Yeah.
So how did you guys get started singing, actually?
Just a love of music. Just,
yeah.
Like we didn't have really nothing to do in the project. We figured, well, let's start a group.
So were you singing even before high school?
Pretty much, and you know, grammar, and then you get to high school and you really, you know, find, you know, the love of the classes, you know, you have music in school and you really just start, you know, listening, like we was talking about the Impressions, you know, Curtis Mayfield, people like that, you know, we started just doing a lot of a cappella stuff, and even the old groups, you know, anything, the Dusties, we just harmonized.
So, and were there any groups that you remember actually from Rockwell Gardens?
Other groups?
Yeah, at the time.
I can't remember.
We were the only one. I believe it just really started.
At that time. You know, we were so concentrating on what we were doing, we didn't look around until we did talent shows.
Right.
So you two guys sang together because you were brothers, obviously.
Yeah.
Did you have, like, a name for your group when you were kids?
You know, we were probably talking about that. We were trying
to think of a name before the Calderons.
And then how did you meet the other two guys?
In a talent show, but they had a name.
Okay.
They had the Modern Men. So
okay.
They called themselves the Modern Men, and we, at that time, we had the Calderons, and so they came in on our name.
So you were already called the Calderons?
Yeah, that's because we was trying to figure that out, and that's, we had it when we started doing our show.
Incorporate together.
Was that in high school you met the other guys?
Right, in high school.
So I haven't asked you, what high school did you guys all go to?
Crane.
Okay.
Crane Tech at that time.
And what years were you in school?
62 to 66
for me. Right, 64. I graduated, 67, I believe, somewhere around there, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a year later than me.
So you guys pretty much met the other two guys in a talent show in your school, and you brought the group together. So so the name Calderons, what does that mean?
I thought we kind of took letters from each of us, but Ronnie said no, it was somebody he knew.
A guy in my class at the time. Yeah. His name was Lewis Calderon. His last name sounded interesting. Okay, so I said, hey, what was that Calderon? Then we started saying Calderon, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's how I came together with the K, and he spelled it a little different.
So you definitely had a unique name, though. And you actually ended up having a band, so you met members of the band in Crane at the time. And I guess that gets to Bruce, who is here now. Mm-hmm. So can you talk about how you got into music?
Well, you know, I started out with a rubber band around that washing bottle box there. You know, I just love guitar. My mother had a guitar. She had a Gibson guitar. She sat in the corner. And every now and then I'd get it and pick it up and just start playing it. But the thing is, it just was, you know, I grew up around a lot of musicians. And it just was something that I just liked. It was just something with the music. And most of the people musicians that I knew, they were guitarists. And even when I was in the grammar school, I was involved in some music. I was the leader of our drum and bugle corps. And I think that's where I really started at, you know, with the, you know, drum and bugle corps in grammar school, you know.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, it was around that time when I became the leader of the drum and bugle corps that I actually started playing guitar. And a friend of mine, he was going to school and taking lessons. And when he got tired of playing, I would get his guitar, and I had to wait till he got tired. And then once he got tired, it was my turn then. And I would just stay out as long as I could just to play it.
So you've been playing since you were a kid.
Yes.
And had you ever played, like, in a band before?
We had a few musicians, different musicians that we played with. We put together several bands, and it wasn't until we really got with the Calderons that we started to all try to work on a professional basis and just do a lot of intense arranging and taking sounds and things that we heard other different records and actually trying to duplicate them. And I just kind of thought that one of the things that was unique is that the bass player that was playing with these guys, his name was Steve Houston. You know, we were the first to go out and buy a record when it first came out, 45. We'd go get that 45. Mm-hmm. We'd come up with we'd get that sound, whether the Temptations or who, and we'd tell, you know, the group, man, we got this, man, this is it. Mm-hmm. We'd be the first, a lot of the groups that were around us on some of the shows to learn, you know, the new songs. And that was, I think that was one of the unique things that about us. We tried to be first.
Head of the pack.
You're saying you were the first to do the Temptations records.
We thought we were first to learn everything because as soon as it came out, we got it.
Okay. But could you talk about how the band got together and then how the band got with the vocal group? Like, were you... You went to high school with these guys?
Yeah, we all went to Crane. I think it was at a talent show.
Yeah, a talent show came.
And we were playing. We had, you know, we had our musicians. And
did you have a name of your band before you got with these guys?
We just had so many different guys that we would play with. At the time that, you know, we got with the Calderons, there wasn't a one unique name because I would play with different people.
Okay.
Who was playing? Because I, you know, just like playing. And
but once you got with the Calderons, did you have a set lineup of people?
Yes.
So and you just found them at a talent show. Was it a talent show at Crane or in a park somewhere?
No.
Where was it?
The guys that I had got together with were people that I knew that played, and you know, people in the neighborhood that were interested in music also. And when we did this one talent show, we had a guy, Steve, we had a guy, Melvin Jones, and Jimmy, when was Jimmy Moore?
Oh, yeah, Jim.
Yeah,
right,
he started on drums with us.
Okay, yeah,
he played for a while, and then we And I got another guy, Alfred Meads, and and that's where we really started to come together. We had one guy on organ at some of our shows. Louis Ball.
Louis Ball played organ.
My friend knows that guy.
Yeah.
I think he's in L.A. now.
He probably is. He's all over it. Yeah. He's Mr. Hammond.
Hammond
B3.
So you guys, did they ask your band to become a part of their group, or you just kind of just started talking to each other? You're like, let's become one group?
They probably asked.
Okay.
But it was more of a mutual thing because we kind of all liked what we were doing,
right.
And we kind of it everything seemed to fit.
Right, and we were doing a lot of shows.
Yeah,
right. We definitely did a band at the time.
Busy. So. Yeah, we had a lot of talent shows, a lot of things. So you know, most musicians want to get with you when you're doing something. You know.
Okay. So let me. We've been talking for a while. Let me play your record "To Love Someone That Don't Love You," and then we'll start talking about how we got. How the record came out and stuff. So this is the Calderons. And one thing is, you were telling me that at the time, your group was actually called the Calderons, K-E-L. Is that right?
Right.
But for some reason on the record, they spelled it Calderons.
Right.
Calderon.
Yeah, that was always a thing. Some people spelled it even with a C in front.
I know, a couple of times.
So this is the Calderons with "To Love Someone That Don't Love You."
Love is free.
Okay, that was just the Calderon or the Calderons with their first record, To Love Someone That Don't Love You. If you're just tuning in, we have members of the Calderons talking about their group and their story. So I want to get to sort of how the record came out. But one thing I wanted to ask is, you guys were in school around the same time that the Pharaohs, they also went to Crane, I think, or a lot of them went to Crane, and some of them went on to be Earth, Wind, and Fire. Do you remember the Pharaohs, or did you ever do shows with them?
Yeah, now that we've been discussing it, and we had to think back to all these shows, and we sure did a bunch of them with them. And,
The last one was Ernie's
8301. Yeah.
So where was that?
It was South Chicago in
83.
Right.
On the corner. Yeah, and we won the bill, and they won it, and it was a rough show.
Yeah.
I think we opened because they was the main act, you know. And I remember that show now. We did so good that they actually got mad. You know, I mean, a lot of acts, you know, because they didn't want us to come on. Because, you know, with that style, that Temptation style and the other things we were doing, it was kind of...
We changed the atmosphere.
Yeah, we changed it.
Which seemed to be good.
Yeah. So
that was a good thing.
But, yeah, we remember those guys. And it was fun, and we were all young and excited.
So at the time... you were doing shows. Were you in school still? Were you out of school by then?
Some of us.
Some
were still in, some were out. Yeah, it was a combination.
So you would do shows at clubs or like talent shows? Did you do clubs in addition?
Yeah, after the talent show phase, that's when the clubs came.
Right. Okay.
You know, when everybody came. More toward the end of the 60s. 68, 69,
yeah,
right. Everybody was out of school then.
We were more in the clubs.
Cimarron Strip, the clubs. We did everything. All over Southwest. Everywhere.
We had a regular thing at the Hot Chaparral.
We were booked there for what? 4 months?
Cimarron Strip.
Peppermint every Monday night. I don't know how long.
So were you... Were you doing music full time, or you just doing whenever you could, like a lot of nights of the week?
Right, whenever everybody had jobs.
Okay.
Part time.
And I understand you had a manager too. Is that right? Who was your manager?
Marcellus Burke.
They were called Uncle Marty.
A lot of people remember him.
He was the uncle of the Five Stair Steps. Is that right?
Yeah, he was Uncle Five.
So how did he become your manager?
I think he was at the wings in one of our shows.
Yeah, he saw us before.
Sitting back waiting and heard us, and then after the show, hey, you
want me the manager?
Yeah. You know, like what I heard. He's a manager.
One of the first shows that we did on the party was at school.
With the school circuit.
Yes.
I think it was.
We did a lot of high schools. We had almost jumped out the window.
Oh, yeah, they chased
us. We did them in Harlan High School.
It was one of the schools.
Yeah. I know the Five Stair Steps were at Harlan.
Right. It was one of the Harlan.
Okay.
We did Harlan. We did all the high schools because that was part of the circuit we had us on to get popular.
So you're saying, but that was that while you were in high school too?
So I think we mostly all graduated.
So you did shows at high schools. How did that work? Like, was it after school they'd put on a show at the high school?
Yeah, they had a lot of like after school. And some of them were doing in the daytime.
Phyllis was doing a day because they had an ROTC there. I remember they were helping me run around the front there because somebody's foot had went through my app.
It was crazy.
I don't forget that.
Right.
Was that before or after you had a record out? It was before you had a record out.
Before.
Because I know a lot of people I talked to, they did like record hops, but a lot of for teenagers, but a lot of that was just to promote their record. But you were actually just doing shows.
Prior to getting, you know, that deal to do that.
So Marcellus, did he book like a review? What was the deal?
Yeah, Uncle Marty review.
That's what
Marty review.
Yep.
Okay. Uncle Marty review.
Okay. So who was on the review?
The Stunners.
Natasha
with Verdine White was her bass player. The girls, the three singers.
He told me that he had a group called the Vachonettes that he managed.
Is that the girls?
Yeah, the three girls.
It was a bunch of groups, but some of them I can't even. Y'all might remember.
Those guys out at the Delphonics. What's their names? I don't know, three guys out. Just like the Delphonics.
Yeah.
Think of their name.
Freddie was one of the
yeah,
choirs.
Freddie, and it was three.
Yeah, some guy. I forgot their name. We can't remiss them. It was so many acts on the bill.
Yeah.
And we would rotate. Whoever was the most popular would move to the top of the bill, you know, be the headliner.
Okay.
And we stayed on. We just everybody back down. Which was nice. We loved it. We just loved it. Perform. So then,
how did you end up getting? So you end up getting a record deal for Twinight Records, which is a record label that mainly Syl Johnson was on, but a few other groups like the Notations and the Dynamic Tints were on. How did you end up getting that record deal?
Smoky back room.
Okay. Back room deals.
Greg was pursuing us. Every time we go after the show in the dressing room, we trying to change clothes. Seal and
Jimmy Johnson is Seal's brother, but right. Jimmy Jones was the Twinight guy with Seal.
Right. Waving papers all the time. After every show, we just went on and said, okay, we'll do one record and see what happened. You know, we was that smart.
But at least you got something out. Because now there's some document of you guys even though it's hard to find, at least.
Exactly.
So, where'd you record the record?
That was at their label, Twilight Studios, Michigan 22nd. Because then they shut it down and closed off that whole, but tore everything down.
Yeah, from where Chess Records were.
Brunswick was down the street. Remember Brunswick Records?
Same that area over there.
Right, everything
was record row was
there. Yeah, record row was a whole lot of, and they was right in there. Yeah,
right.
So, and your actual the Calderon's band plays on this record, is that right?
Yeah.
But there was like some, when we played it, there were some strings on top of that.
They added strings.
Okay. Uh-huh. And who did Syl produce the record?
Yeah, you know, we're not sure if Syl and Jimmy did it together.
I think Jimmy's name is on the record.
Yeah, I think they both had something to do with it.
So did they write the songs?
I think Jimmy wrote it.
Because
his name is on the songwriting credit.
Jimmy wrote it.
Okay. Yeah, so let me play. Well, first of all, let me play the other side of the record and we can talk some more. So, on this side of the record, people can hear the more Temptations kind of influence. This is called You and Me, Baby.
You and me, baby. Right from the world I know. You and me, baby.
Okay, cool. So we are back. That was just the Calderons with the other side of their record. It was called You and Me Baby, released on Twinight Records. Do you remember, I think it came out maybe around 1969, something like that?
Around that era, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that record, you cut it, but it didn't really get play or promotion.
Right.
They just didn't do anything with it?
They shelved it. Stole the shelf.
For some reason. Maybe they had another act that was similar to us or something. You know how they do.
Right.
This is too much like that, so we won't play it.
Yeah, it's too bad because it's a nice cut.
Yeah,
they did have the Dynamic Tints, who also had a Temptations kind of sound.
Okay.
But I mean, yeah, I don't know why they didn't promote it, because especially the other side was a really nice ballad, mm-hmm. To Love Someone That Don't Love You.
Yeah.
It had that real Chicago.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
It had that nice Chicago sound, too, on it.
But it didn't stop us. We kept going.
I know, we kept on moving.
So your group stayed together for a while. After that,
right?
Did you changed your name? Is that right?
Yeah, we went to the Final Solution.
Final Solution.
Mm-hmm. How'd you come up with that name?
Oh boy!
How they came about?
We just had a whole list of names.
I got no idea.
Somebody got mad at us. Say that wasn't a good name.
Yeah, we just selected that name. Had this stuff selected.
That was the problem. But the group turned out to we still did a lot of good stuff with that name.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So when did you become the Final Solution?
Oh, what do you think, right?
Probably about mid-70s?
Yeah, probably the mid-70s.
Yeah.
I would think so, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, in fact, and so you guys just did the same types of thing. You did clubs, is that right?
Yeah, a lot more.
Right.
But it got deeper. We got really more professional. We started trying to get our own sound, an original sound other than Temptation.
So how, in what way did you become more funky at that time? Because that was the sound of...
Okay. I'd say so.
Yeah, unfortunately, the unreleased material isn't playing on our equipment.
Yeah.
But at the time, were you still managed by Marcellus Burke?
Oh, how long did we go? I think we had...
Yeah, at that time, I think we had
cut ties when we changed our name, because he was more associated with the Calderon at that time.
Okay.
Right. When we left him.
Did you have a manager, or you just managed yourselves?
We managed ourselves, right.
And so you did the similar club circuit that you were doing before.
But a lot more.
And so you were just a popular band and group in the Chicago scene.
Mm-hmm.
And so one thing that's interesting is you told me that you cut a whole album, or you cut at least some unreleased material as a Final Solution. What's the story with that?
Okay, let's see. We were out performing Chuck Colbert and Paul David Wilson with Herschel Commercials saw us.
Mm-hmm.
And they really liked us. They told us, hey, we can do something with you guys.
Chuck Colbert was the Daylighters guy, right?
The
guy with the mustache. I think at the time he was with the American Breed at that time.
Yeah, a bunch of different acts down the line and, into the music scene. And he, him and Paul, they were partners. And Paul had Herschel Commercials, so that hooked us up with the commercial scene, too, with him running that company.
So you did radio commercials or TV commercials?
As the Final Solution.
Okay. Do you remember some of the ads you did?
Sunkiss on
McDonald's.
All of McDonald's, Smith Malt Liquor.
Sunkiss
was the biggest and the longest running.
You don't have any recordings of the old ads you did, do you?
I think I got a copy at home, I believe.
I think about bringing it right
there. Because it would be awesome to hear that.
That would have been awesome.
Oh, man.
Man, we didn't even think about it.
So that's how you got some work doing advertisements. What about, you actually ended up cutting some material. What's the story with that?
Carl. That was our other buddy, musician buddy, Carl Wolfolk, who wrote Can I Change My Mind for Tyrone and a bunch of stuff. He had a name going, had the gold record, and we like, oh, okay, write us something. So he did.
Okay.
He came up with a whole album full of good stuff. And that's where it went from there. With Carl, we presented it to Paul and them, and they liked it, and they took us in.
Was Bruce? Were you a member of the group still at the time? The Final Solution?
Not the Final Solution, but I knew Paul Wilson and Chuck Colbert. I was playing with another group, and Paul Wilson, Chuck Colbert, he came into this place we were playing. I think it was a it was a church that had a dance going on, mm-hmm. and I was playing over, just playing over, improvising with this band. And he came over and asked me, he said, "Would you want to do something for me in the studio?" And I said, "Sure." You know, everybody's always asking, "Can you do this? Can you do that?" And he said, "I'll give you a call." I said, "Okay." I gave my number, and he called me the next day as soon as I got off of work and asked me, "Can I come down there?" And I said, "Okay." And I went down and we did a couple Christmas tunes. I thought they were kind of nice. I thought it was going to be something that we could probably use.
Wait, what was it? Was it called the Electric Jungle, something like that? Because he released
Electric
a Christmas
Jungle.
I played it last week. I did a Christmas show. I did a Christmas show last week, and I played the Electric Jungle. It was one side was called Soul Santa.
Soul Santa.
And the other
side.
That's funny that I played your record just last week.
Oh, yeah,
like,
okay.
I'll send it to you. I played it during my Christmas show.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, fun with that. And you know, at the time we were down there in the studio, Dana Ross was down in the studio. She was walking around, and she was so little. I said, "Man, that is like Dana Ross." And she came over, and it was her. She was there having one of these shoes. You know, they were, you know, in the studio that we were in. The one section they screen, you know, movies and take little parts out there and make changes.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Well, I'm gonna get an autograph, but I got this $10 bill. I got to get something to eat." So they didn't have a rain right there. But it was a real nice experience. That we had a good time there that evening.
But you didn't do it. You didn't contribute to the Final Solution recording at all.
No, we didn't.
Okay.
No.
So the Final Solution recording, you recorded it. How come it didn't get released?
The masters got tied up some kind of way in the studio where, you know how people make deals, I guess. They got it on the studio and Chuck, and something happened with that. And the masters got tied up for over 3 years because we were so mad.
So just the deal didn't go through and you got
to... Yeah.
But apparently Carl still has those tapes, right? So hopefully they'll see the light of day.
Yeah.
So now we have two stories kind of branching off because Bruce was involved with a bunch of stuff. And you. Yeah. So let me first ask you guys about what you did after the Final Solution. So did the group stay together for a while?
Yeah, we did.
We stayed together to the 80s,
maybe the mid-80s, I'm thinking, because remember we did some shows with Swopes, Mary Swopes, modeling and stuff.
Okay,
and
I brought
the guys in, and we did some shows, because I was in working with a modeling school. And
so what do you mean you did model? Oh, like the models came on the catwalk and you played music or something?
That, too, I was everything. I would work with, she had male models and female, and I would work with the male models because she had shows, and you know, I was like one of the guys that coordinated and worked with her on putting pageants together and set.
Oh, you produced? You helped produce the shows?
Everything.
Okay.
I was just totally involved with that for a while, and that's when I would bring all my friends down, you know, at different times to do certain things. And that's when we kind of would always stick together to do a lot of those things. And then we started branching off from there, you know, after that kind of...
So, but the Final Solution was together through the 80s,
early
80s, So one thing that you did, you actually released a record under the name The Marathon Band.
Mm-hmm.
Was that members of the Final Solution, or what's the deal with that?
Right, my youngest brother and me. Not Ronnie. Ronnie, because, you know, that stuff, we didn't... He's basically a bass singer, and we didn't use a bass singer on none of that. You know, we was trying to go into another sound without the temp thing. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
And so I know Ronnie say, "Oh, man, why y'all leave me out?" But, you know, but he was always around for whatever projects. But that was a whole nother era, you know.
So you cut this record as the Marathon Band, and the Marathon Band is
right.
You and your younger brother. What's your younger brother's name?
Lamont.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And this got released in 1984.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to play the side. I think it's called Traveling Shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm going to play the Thinking About You side.
Yeah.
And so what's the deal? You just this is your own record label?
Right, that's our label. We got a little deeper into the music business at that time. You know, the whole, you know how you just...
And actually, you have your own publishing and
everything. We just totally started getting more business-like and stuff, you know.
Okay, but you didn't really get radio play or promoted.
We tried, you know.
I know it was very difficult for independent labels at the time.
Yeah, so you know, we did as much as we could, and you know, still kept going after that. You know, we didn't let it hold us up.
Okay, well, let me play the record, and we could talk some more.
Okay.
So you're getting radio play now.
Okay.
So this is the Marathon Band with Thinking About You. Okay, that was just the Marathon Band with, it was actually a pretty nice ballad, I never heard it before, called Thinking About You from 1984. And if you're just tuning in, we have members of the Kelderons, at least one of which up in here recorded with the Marathon Band. So who was singing on that record?
That was me, Daryl Kennedy. Yeah.
And there were other singers too. Who were the other people singing?
My brother Lamont Johnson and Jerome Carson. The three of us did all the vocals.
And Jerome was a member of the band too?
Yeah, he played bass, Lamont played guitar, and then we had Joe Lester Jordan on drums.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you were telling me that you only pressed like one or two hundred copies for the demo.
Yeah.
And but you used it to get other work. You were telling me it got play on somehow on cable or something.
We got on a cable. Music Vision was the program, and
so you performed live on the show.
Yeah, it was a live thing, and it was broadcast. And you know, matter of fact, I have a copy of it. You guys might have it too.
That'd be cool. That would be cool to see too.
Yeah, it was pretty nice, and you know, it was part of the promotion, trying to let people, you know, the exposure thing, and it was fun.
So, how long was the Marathon Band together?
Oh, at least maybe 5 more years.
So to the late 80s, pretty much.
Yeah, late 80s going into the 90s, you know. Yeah.
Okay. And I know you've done even stuff after that, but I want to get into some of the things that Bruce has done, because I found out about something I didn't know about a second ago. So what happened after the Kelderons broke? Well, the Kelderons became the Final Solution. You left the group, is that right?
Yeah, we did. We stayed in touch as far as, you know, a friendship, but we just was, I think we were doing other things naturally.
Yeah, yeah.
Before we left the Kelderons, though, we got some other musicians a couple other musicians that joined us. They had a name, and they wanted to keep the name that they had was Heaven's Rejects.
Heaven's Rejects.
And the guys were good guys. They were good guys. We all worked real good together. I just didn't like the name of the group. Heaven's Rejects. That was the thing. I just didn't like that name. Heaven's Rejects. Yeah. So anyway, when we did kind of drift off there, I started a band called The Other Half.
Okay.
And I figured, well, that's the other half.
Yeah.
And
so you were the other half of the Kelderons.
Yeah, we just called the other half. Yeah.
But were other members of the Kelderons in your band that were in?
Steve.
I think Steve for a while. Yeah. Steve and.
So when was that, in the early 70s? You formed that band.
Late 70s.
Yeah.
But you were still involved with music in throughout the 70s.
Yeah.
You mentioned that one thing, how you played on that Electric Jungle funky Christmas Soul Santa record, which was just, it wasn't a real group, but it was just something that Chuck Colbert threw together in the studio.
Right, with some musicians, and it worked out real, it was fun, it was nice.
And did you perform on any other records in the 70s?
In the 70s, no, just that, and then the one that we did back in 60s, no, that was it for us, that was it.
So did you have a band together in the 70s, or you did session work?
Yeah, well, no, I just played, you know, we had the other band, The Other Half.
But that was the late 70s,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and from that...
So in the early 70s, did you do session work, or were you in another band?
No, just The Other Half is the name of the band. That was the other band that we played with, and I played for years.
Okay.
We were together for, I don't know, maybe 8 years or so.
Okay. And from like 79 to 80 something, probably?
We started another band.
Okay.
And one of the last bands that had got with a jazz band, a smooth jazz, Lexus BBM, you know, some guys. We were doing a little smooth jazz, which was kind of cool. And I had my blues band that I only did blues with for a certain client. And it was called Midnight Soul, Night Soul. And we just did a lot of blues stuff. That's all we did. And we had a couple singers from the Black Ensemble Theater, you know, they were singing. Queen Roy, she's one of their stars over there. She was one of our main singers.
When was this?
This was just only a few years ago.
Okay.
Up to now, because I was playing with several bands at one time.
The Herbie Babies,
yeah. Herbie had 3103. We had our thing from, I think, 1996 for up until now, which, you know, we something come up, we still would do something, but it's not a thing that we do often. But we did all the parties for the radio station and the little promo stuff here and there and some special parties and stuff like that we would do. And that was with Herb Kent doing rhythm guitar and stuff like that.
Okay.
And
wait, so did Herb play in your band?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we had this name, Herb Baby. We named it Herb.
I know he's always talking about learning guitar.
He's a diligent guy, I tell you.
So you're his teacher, Herb Kent's teacher?
Yeah, we started out doing that, for about teaching him for maybe about 6 or 7 years there. Mm-hmm. It was a good thing. And, like I said, we still kind of do a little stuff there, something come up there. But other than that, that's Midnight Soul was a blues band that I did, a lot of personal stuff, just for a blues scene. But I kind of eased out of that and eased more into my gospel. And I got so much into gospel, and I tell you, I got to a point there where I just didn't want to turn around. So that's my main music right now.
So you play mainly in church. Do you have a choir or a group together? What's the name of your group?
Well, I play for the Sanctuary Craft Progressive Baptist Church.
Where's that?
It's 37th in Wentworth.
Okay.
Actually, 3658.
Okay.
Yeah, we have four choirs over there.
Are you like the leader of the band?
No, I'm just the lead guitarist over there, and guitar synthesizer.
Okay.
So there I do a combination guitar and guitar synthesizer, which is a unique sound, and that's something that I really enjoy.
And if you guys put out any recordings, or you just play in church every week?
No, we record, but we have a radio broadcast. We broadcast the following week. But we haven't done put out any CDs or anything like that.
Okay. And one thing that's interesting is, I guess, Darrow and his brother are also involved with gospel now, too. Is that right?
Right.
So can you talk about some of the things that you've done since the Marathon Band, at least?
Well, my youngest brother, our youngest brother, Lamont, he's a minister, and he's really, that's his baby. That's what he does. And he asked us to, work with him on it, because he knew, growing up, all of us were together, he knew the music is there and we could handle it. So we all started just focusing on pushing him. It's his project. He's the lead singer on everything, and he's an excellent musician.
Oh, yeah. He's playing the guitar since he's like 5 years old.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's playing groups, starting with a rubber band. Same kind of thing in the house. And he can play everything. He can play a lot of instruments, and he's really good, and he's on all the tracks. He's doing all the music,
So he multi-tracks and does all the parts.
All the instruments.
So we're the vocal part of the brothers to come in, and he calls us in when he's got it all down, and we come in and sing with him on it.
So he sings lead and you sing backup on the records.
Yeah, we back him up. So that's what's, where we're at with that right now.
So I have a stack of some of the things that you've done, like CDs and cassettes.
Right.
So one of the things you've done is the Million Woman March. What's the story with that?
Okay, the lady that I did the modeling and coordinating with, she got involved with the people that does that, all the different marches every year, and she asked me to, come up with a song for them, and she was going to present it to the coordinators of that project, and they heard it, and they loved it, and they told me to, package it, and they'll promote it, and we went there. We went to Philly and did the whole, the Million Woman March scene and soul tapes. And
what year was this?
I think it was 90s. Is it 96 on there? I think.
Your other cassette says 96. This doesn't have. This one doesn't have a date on it.
97 maybe. I think it was the year after. I can't. Everything was happening so fast. But I think 97. You're right, the next year.
And you have another thing here is a cassette you did from 96 called Live It Up.
Me.
Is that gospel or secular music?
No, that's, me as a lead singer. I've totally packaged that myself. I did all the music. I used Ronnie's vocals on a couple of tracks.
Okay.
Ronnie Don't Pay and Peace, I think, you singing on that.
Two tracks.
Yeah. A while back. Anyway, your voice is on two of the tracks.
Okay.
And, yeah, I did a solo project on myself just to see, and I did all the music on that myself. So, you know, we all pretty musically inclined like that.
And then I have a CD that I'm going to play now, and this is your brother, I guess, Lamont J. and Company. And the CD is called Whole Armor of Gold.
Whole Armor of God.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. Sorry. Obviously, that doesn't make sense.
You'd like to have some gold.
You better have some God.
The suit of armor on the cover is gold. That's why I was misreading it. So, and this came out in 2005.
Right.
So I'm going to play a track of this called Rejoice, and then we can talk some more.
Rejoice, man! Rejoice in God, the Lord is good. Rejoice in your neighborhood. Rejoice in God, the Lord is great. Rejoice in God, the food you eat. Rejoice in all your family. Rejoice in your liberty. Rejoice for the atmosphere. Rejoice for your home sweet home. Rejoice to never leave you alone. Rejoice because the Lord is real. Rejoice because you know the deal.
Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. If you're just tuning in, you have been listening to an interview with members of the Calderons. So first of all, I got to say thanks so much, you guys, for coming up down and coming down here and telling your story.
Thank you.
And you made some great records. It's too bad that they didn't get the promotion that they wanted. Hopefully, that the unreleased Final Solution stuff will see the light of day. So do you have any last words for the listening audience?
Oh, well, we hope you're listening, first of all.
That'll help. Enjoy the music.
And there you go.
Yeah, we enjoyed it.
Because we sure did. We enjoyed doing it, and that is our love. And we definitely love God, and we hope you all have Him in your hearts.
Yeah, the real Final Solution is God.
There you go, Bruce.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay, well, thanks again.